Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And as I promised, I'm going to get into the lecture today. If you believe in prayer, if you have a tool bag of spiritual tools, fasting, prayer, and so forth, by all means, please consider getting people to contribute, work with you, have prayer circles, because I do believe that we need to start helping America heal spiritually. Because that's going to happen, whether we like it or not. As a matter of fact, I love speaking in absolute truths. And an absolute truth is, every knee will bow and every tongue will confess. And if you don't know what that means, someday, at some point in time, maybe not in this life, but coming up, that you will understand that. So, anyway, I really hate, and as a matter of fact, I know that I have listeners that hate it when I dive into too much religious talk. But bottom line, I want to encourage those people to do what you can to have other people, because I truly believe in the power of prayer. So that all being said, let me just dive into the election. Those states that are steeped with election fraud might, and I say might, actually have the benefit, and I'll literally say this, they may have the benefit of getting assistance from the federal government, constitutional assistance from the federal government. Now, what I believe is going to happen, and I'm not surprised that Trump won. As a matter of fact, I put it out there. I saw that he needed to be the next president because of what he ended up doing. And it was stunted because it didn't move forward. And I think that there's, to be honest, I just don't see things ever getting better until you do something about it. Trump can. There's things he can do. He didn't deliver his first 4 years. He made America a little better, but the global agenda still moved forward. And no, it wasn't as much as at the... I can't even say that. I mean, there were good things he did, and there were bad things he did. If this man really cares about healing this nation and putting it on the right path, he would basically shelve the Abraham Accords and worry about liberty. Don't worry about the religious infighting between the Islamic State and everybody that hates Israel and blah, blah, blah. I mean, what America needs to do is America needs to get back into the framework of the Constitution. Because we're still, you know, if you think that debt clock's not going to ratchet up. Trump spent a lot of money. If he's changed, is he a different man? I believe, and I've said this, I've actually argued this in social media, that Trump is a billionaire and he's a part of the club. He's a part of the globalist club. Every billionaire is a part of that club. They all do their little job, or they have to get a lot of resistance, or they get their comeuppance, or what have you. And Trump, you know, if anybody thinks that he wasn't a part of that, no, he's a good... Come on, he's the guy that bragged about understanding the swamp and putting it on steroids. So, if America is going to see these changes, if it's going to actually get better, the only way we can get better, folks, is not financially. It is not, you know, going down all these different myopic paths. It's not, you know, the whole having, you know, all your guns you want. It is about getting completely into the frameworks so that the federal government is no longer functioning with all of these roles, responsibilities, and powers and property that it has no constitutional standing to do. Now, Trump can, and this is, I think, where the hope is, and this is, I think, what people want to hear. We saw how the DOJ has been weaponized, and as a matter of fact, we already know that Obama used it and excoriated conservative movements and so forth. They went after patriots. They went after patriots. Biden did the exact same thing. And so if Trump is serious about, you know, getting America right and making America great again, he needs to make the DOJ basically give it a single focus that government will function in compliance to the Constitution. And then he can use the Department of Justice. All he's got to do is shut down all of these different programs of investigating laws and so forth that they don't have any federal cognizance over. Now, what are the federal laws currently that the federal government has cognizance over? Treason, that's one. Counterfeiting is another. And laws committed against the laws of nations and laws committed high crimes and misdemeanors committed on the high seas, I should say. Crimes and misdemeanors or felonies, what have you. International water, international land, and then in America, it is treason and counterfeiting. That's it. So if the DOJ is doing anything, investigating anything in the states or with companies like, you know, let's just say insider trading, you know, some fraud reporting, whatever, with the SEC or the stock market, what have you, or even labor. You want to heal America, get the DOJ to go actually after and get rid of every congressman, every judge, and every state operator in politics or bureaucrats that are grinding agendas and doing things that are in violation of the Constitution. And ergo, all he has to do is, but he needs the states to push this. He needs the states to actually take a stand and say, you don't have the authority to do all of these things. Can he get us into a republic review in 4 years? Absolutely he could. Absolutely he could. As a matter of fact, if he could lead in the conversation instead of just saying, well, it's a great thing and this is great and we've, you know, it's just, we've really enjoyed the greatness. I mean, if he could actually focus and academically speak to the limited and defined nature, those very enumerated objects within the Constitution, and those are the only things that we can be doing, and getting the states to say, hey, why, and telling the states, why are you allowing us to do all of these things? You look at how much money we've been spending. Get us to actually get right so that we can turn around to these world banks and all these bankers and say, look, you know, all of this money that you've been giving us to do all these things we had no business doing, that was all fraudulent money. We had no authority to take that money. And you knew this. You knew this. You were doing this to get us. This is what Satan does to trap you. He gets you one way or another to get you into doing something you shouldn't be doing. And, oh, well, now you got to pay that off. But the problem is, the grand facade is that we don't owe anything. They don't have the authority to actually borrow money to spend it on things they don't have the authority to do. The spending, if they're going to make a spending bill, one, first off, it has to be within those laws that are pursuant to the Constitution. Is it about war? Okay, they can do that. And see, I know a lot of people, you know, because they did use the war program for the longest time to bolster international, or I should say, creating these large corporations that became international corporations. if you actually look at how America started expanding itself, it did this. It did this with its economic might. And it did this to create these large, strong corporations that could actually start getting injected into other international markets and so forth. This is one of the reasons why we now see these global corporations, global organizations that have so much power. We helped create the new era of kings and princesses and princes and queens. Anyway, when I look at some of the feedback, and have you seen the image? Because there's a really good image that actually kind of encapsulates the election. If you look at the 2012 election and you look at how many people voted in 2012, interestingly, the numbers were, you know, kind of reasonable. It was somewhere around 120 million, 125 to 130. But when you look at 2016, a little bit higher. I mean, it increased somewhat. And then when you look at 2020, shoot, the Democrats had over 80 million votes and the Republicans had over 70 million votes, almost 75, to the tune of where we had well over 150. I mean, there is such a large amount of votes existing in that 2020 election that didn't even come up this year. In other words, if you look at how many people voted, what was it? This graph is depicting these, you know, it's just a graph. So it's giving you about 66 million for the Democrats and 70 some million for the Republicans. And so the point is that where did all those votes go in 2020? And I will tell you that those votes didn't go, they came. Because in the 2020 election, if you remember, the election spanned over into the next day. There were many states, eastern states, battleground states, that couldn't get the job done. And bottom line, what ended up happening was all of a sudden there was a reallocation of votes or an injection of a whole bunch of votes in the middle of the night. We all saw the steal. We all understand that. So getting back to what Trump can do with the DOJ, if he's serious, he will make sure that there is no voter fraud at all, ever. He'll dismantle the federal government's involvement in the election systems, that every state must, and as a matter of fact, he needs to make it so and veto any congressional attempt in trying to create a voting system for the states. Because if you leave it to 50 states, then you keep it from becoming a national conspiracy. And let every state basically go down their own path. And as a matter of fact, the path and proven path is by in-person voting. And as a matter of fact, we've got to get away from this concept of having an election year that actually takes a whole month, where people can actually go and start voting in September. Election should be one day, not a period of time. I know that there's latitude to do that, but folks, the longer the election runs, the greater the opportunities the bad people have in adjusting and or manipulating and corrupting the election. The temptation is so overwhelming. America has been steeped with voter fraud for decades, actually probably over a century now. Landslide Lyndon, that term Landslide Lyndon, that actually goes all the way back to, I believe, the 50s. And so, and that was a case where they were actually, it became a well-known fact that Landslide Lyndon actually became the senator for Texas because of voter fraud. Or actually, maybe it was election fraud, because voter fraud is done by the individual voters that are voting twice or what have you. And actually, it was the people that conducted the election, because what ended up happening is an entire town happened to vote by alphabetical order. In other words, the way they do the vote in this one town, I'll just give you the little backstory on this. And I forget the town, but go look it up. The people went in, and what they did was the first person in, they would write them down in a log that this person voted, and this is who they voted for. And lo and behold, the entire town voted for Lyndon B. Johnson, and they happened to come in alphabetical order. In other words, by circumstance and chance, and you know, the planets completely aligned, that when everybody showed up to get in that voter line, from A to Z, they all lined up in alphabetical order so that they could take their votes. And this came out late. In other words, this information wasn't available as the polls ended. As a matter of fact, they realized that they needed more votes, and this one town had sent in, as a precinct or what have you, they hadn't sent in their voting results. And so, lo and behold, they came in with 100% for Lyndon. It was challenged, and they looked at the book, and the book actually had it, and it was accepted that way. And that's how evil does this. I had a conversation. I get these conversations all the time, that elections and your vote is to be private. There's no constitutional requirement. We went down this path because the only way we could actually get away with voting for bad people that were going to create bad government. And then, well, there's no such thing as bad government. Yeah, there is. If government is doing something it has no authority to do, then that's bad government. But at this point in time, they started convincing people that, well, they can do these things. As long as we compromise, we can do it, because nobody understood the Constitution. And so that's how, well, we can vote ourselves for, you know, minimum wage. We can vote ourselves for, you know, food stamps and all sorts of welfare. No, we can't. That's not enumerated in the Constitution. And in most state constitutions, it's not enumerated either. As a matter of fact, I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to go through all of the constitutions that I have and look to find out what state actually has legitimately amended their constitution so that they can establish a minimum wage, where they have the power to regulate wages in their state. I'll bet you anything, I won't find any of the states that I have actually have that power. So how is it that they actually have their own minimum wage? You want to fix the economy? Get rid of the minimum wage. Watch what happens. Because what will end up happening is we'll actually start working into a free market on labor. When you look and the places that are going to struggle the most are the places that have inflated wages. Because bottom line, people will hold on to their money and say, I'm not going to hire you and pay you that wage for doing what you're doing. And lo and behold, we'll actually be able to bring back reasonable prices again. But it's not just on the wages end. That doesn't fix the problem. We have to actually start freeing up resources. We actually have to start freeing up all of our markets. I've been telling people, and most people, it just flies over their head, we do not have a free market system. It is a mercantile system, just like it was in England. We have a completely government-regulated and controlled market in every aspect. So I'm sure that there are lots of people that are very, very happy with the outcome. But I look at certain things, and I don't think that Abraham Accord is going to go away. But that's okay, because it's the sign of the times. But if you understand who's doing it and why it's being done and the purpose behind that, then you have to acknowledge that these are those times. We're moving towards that time where the world will actually give and hoodwink Israel. This Israel, not Israel the nation, the tribe of Judah, Israel, because Judah is not Israel, technically, but the land, they call it that, because that's supposedly the land of Israel. But anyway, nevertheless, when the world basically says, don't worry, we recognize you, and you're a welcome part of our community, that's supposed to happen, and it's being done. That's the whole point behind, if you look at the Abraham Accord, I think that's the whole point, is recognizing Israel and allowing it to exist. So, things are happening. The question is, how is this going to pan out? And as I tell people all the time, it's not going to pan out well for the Constitution and our liberties. It's not. I never considered that the whole flip to going evil would actually be the debauchery of Rome, that forced Rome to collapse. There will be lots of other things that will actually cause all of that. It won't be by the debauchery. Technically, it is. It is by moral turpitude. I mean, you can't tell me that that's not an element. But when we look at our government and those things, it is going to deceive everybody. And, you know, I'm not making this up, because when the Bible says that all the good people are going to be deceived, the whole world will be deceived, then that's just telling you the truth. That's all. So when we were covering making all elections local last, one of the things I started talking about, because this is all about republicanism. What is republicanism? Republicanism is a representative government that is operating on very specific powers, very specific objects. In other words, they don't have general powers. You don't just throw them in a room and say, go do good things. You direct them to take care of these specific things. Protect our sovereignty. Declare war if necessary. You know, and go down these few paths of these. Because for the most part, when we really look at what's in there, they have the responsibility of protecting us from economic warfare by regulating the trade from foreign nations. They do not. The federal government does not have the ability to regulate commerce within the states, and technically only among the states, as far as making sure that we're playing fairly with each other, that we can't be doing and waging economic war within the union. That's it. And then regulating trade with the Indian tribes. But at that point, and at this point in time, you know, we've kind of lost sight of, and the 14th Amendment has completely pushed that into a new paradigm. Because the 14th Amendment has literally made everybody that has been living under the jurisdiction of the United States and is born here for generations, i.e., the Indians or the Native Americans, and at that point in time, the slaves that were not allowed to be citizens. The whole point was they had to fix the unconstitutional law that the Supreme Court created. This is what we've covered, these things in just the recent past weeks, because we're still covering the Constitution. But the reality is this. In a Republican form of government, we have representatives that go and represent us on those issues that we've delegated them. They just can't take it up to themselves and go, you know what, we need to bring some businesses here. How many counties actually have been delegated the authority to manage and regulate your local economy? Is that within your state constitution? Then why is it that we have city planners, county planners, and state planners? Why do we have that if it's not within the delegated powers? Because the federal government has started to do this engineering and said, well, you guys need to have some engineers to basically consider themselves with people that have blank checks. Because what ends up happening is these guys start creating plans, and they actually start getting plans passed without any thinking of whether they actually have the authority to do that. So as we kind of look at businesses and organizations, because this, I started talking specifically about contributions, how businesses were going into, you know, into the 1800s, late 1800s and into the 1900s, they started getting very actively involved in getting government to serve them, getting them to actually give them blank checks. So when we come back, I don't want to bleed into this. So when we come back, I'm going to dive into how to control the business contributions and lock these things down to the area of election. We'll be right back after this. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. So the real question is, do you want to maintain businesses that are, do you want to maintain the law that allows businesses to contribute directly to campaigns and government laws and those types of things? If you do, then you don't want a Republican form of government, because at this point in time, business has never, it's never been designed within the Constitution for businesses or those types of organizations to have representation, which means, friends, that they should not be the ones walking into your county commissioners, walking into your state legislatures and say, we need you to do these things for us. We need you to pass a law that, you know, basically like create a no-fault law for car insurance with car insurance companies. These lobbyists come in and they get the government or the tire people, the whole racket of tires. Oh, you have to make a law so that people, you know, if they have a tire that's bald or what have you, or if these new standards on tires so that we force them to get a new one. Regulating the tires that, you know, these auto shops, repair shops, what have you, they will not touch that tire unless you're buying a new one if it requires a new one. In other words, allowing them to put a little bandana over their face and hold a gun to you and say, stick them up, you got to buy a tire today whether you like it or not. This is all repugnant, allowing these types of things to go in. Does your state have the authority to actually allow those types of things to you? It's one thing to have the spirit of the law. It's another thing to actually have the letter of the law basically being inflicted upon you where you lose your liberties. So it's really simple. We have to start stripping corporations and businesses from being able to contribute, period. If the person's going to be writing a check, it has to be the person that's doing it. That way it is not hidden. And that way that person actually has to report it based on their income. Now, if their income is a business that is, you know, let's say you've got an employer or an employee, like the owner of a company, and the majority of the business that company makes, all the profits that they're bringing in is not from the area of the election, then they can't use any of their wages or the percentage of the wages that are not from within that area. In other words, we need to make this an accounting nightmare for anybody and everybody that is, you know, rolling in money because all sorts of people from around the world are pouring money into them. Such as when you, if you have somebody that's running an oil company and they're pulling oil out of the land, who are they selling that to? Where is that money coming from? Oh, that money is coming from people out of the state. In other words, they're not selling that to a distillery, or not a distillery, a refinery. That's, you know, they're not moving that. They don't own that oil. They're selling it to somebody that will actually put it into their refinery and then distribute it out for sale. They're just the front end of that, which means that the money that they're making is external to the area of election. It's not organic. And it's nice to be able to have that kind of money, but you can't influence elections. You will actually see that this will force most corporations from being able to, you know, contribute. So it comes down to your wages. If your wages, if because you work for a company that is actually, you know, an international company where your money is not coming organic from the area of election, then you can't contribute. You shouldn't be able to contribute. It doesn't mean that you can't go and get involved, but that money is because this, we have to stop Soros. We have to stop corporations from being able to go and set up a business and or a company as a shell to funnel money in. One of the things that we noticed in elections in Washington state, and I know that there's a few other states that experienced this, and this actually happened. This goes back to the homosexual marriage, whatever you want to call the marriage, the same-sex marriage initiative in Washington state. Washington state was one of the only states, just like Washington state was one of the only states that passed abortion as an amendment to the Constitution. What they did was they brought in, and actually Soros was behind this, they brought in thousands of kids, college kids, that came in and set themselves up around high schools, around the population centers with community colleges and so forth, and they had them in there for about a year, and they got registered to vote, and actually they went in, and they were paid. And these are ideologues, so they're not. It's not like they were making $70,000. You know, they were being given these, you know, co-op condos or what have you, where they would actually house all these kids in, and they would actually operate like parasites. They would go into the schools because that was their job, was to go as activists, grassroots activists, to get people to get registered to vote, 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds, get registered to vote and go down and, you know, vote, and this is how we want you to vote. Love is love, and this whole movement. We've seen this, and actually I've heard this has happened in Wyoming recently. They're seeing people come in for they're transient. They're only in there for 6 months or whatever it takes to be able to establish residency so they can get elected, so they can get registered to vote. They vote and then they're gone. They go somewhere else. So they're doing these things in these very rural states. Why? Because it doesn't take much to actually budge the outcome one way or the other. We've got to stop that. Those people should not be able to actually be able to be registered to vote. In other words, we have to look at creating stabilized, because there's a reason why you couldn't become a citizen of the United States until you were in the status of becoming a citizen for 5 years. You had to be a resident for 5 years. And the state requirements were the same. I believe we need to actually restore those types of things. We need to restore it because we need to make sure that we can't allow a wave of transient people to be able to come in, just like transient corporations, to come in, you know, create this nice building, you know, pay all this money for this nice building, bring in all these people to work for a little while, and boom, they're done, they're out. And then they sell it, and they actually just walk away and allow that piece to, you know, that property to be scarfed up for pennies on the dollar. Now, that's a great buy for somebody to buy that, but the political impact is far worse. It's far worse because this is how bad governing happens. And this is how we actually have these democracies. To technically, the same-sex marriage law is one of those things that should have been a constitutional amendment. It shouldn't have just been a law. In other words, the question is, the states have assumed the authority over marriage. Is it in the Constitution? No, it's not. Most states don't even have that. They just assumed that they took over this responsibility of civil law. We don't have civil law. We actually have common law. The fact is, folks, when we start looking at where all of our problems are, every problem that we have is directly associated to powers not granted. Those objects are not something they should even have. They shouldn't even be doing these things. Maybe it's a good intention, but remember, and Washington, in his farewell address, actually, you know, went down this path as warning us to say, don't allow government to just do good things that they don't have the authority to do. Because this is the pretense of, and sets up the stage of how good countries, good nations are destroyed. So one of the things that I wanted to also get into, and I'll probably just dive into this a little bit later, is the fact that we need to get you to start understanding how to get organized. So if you haven't read Why Counties Matter Most, that's not the article to do that. But you need to understand that, because you need to understand that the real problem is that we have failed to establish our government. Government is instituted by we the people, and we have a real problem. Our local government has never been instituted by we the people. If it had, then you would have a constitution where the people have delegated those powers. You may have had elections, and you may think that that is how you institute. No, that's not how governments are instituted in the United States. In the United States, a government is created and instituted via a compact, via a constitution. So we need to actually get, and so we're going to dive into this. Let me get into the stuff that we've got to cover. We still got to cover the Constitution. We're going over the progressive amendments. And then once we should be done in the next day or two, we're talking about the 16th and 17th amendments. There's just a few more amendments we'll just gloss over. But the point is, and the reason we're going to go through this is we're going to prove that those amendments didn't grant the federal government any more power or any way to create new laws. These were really administrative amendments. So we're going to go through that. Then when we're done with that, we're going to dive back into the resolutions, and we're going to dive back into the notes on nullification and how this concept of what came out of the resolutions, which was the point of those resolutions, was interposition. And somehow it got completely perverted into this concept of single state nullification. And so we're going to dive through those things, and we're not going to dive through them. We're going to painstakingly go back through those. You have to understand those documents. Then we'll only have so much time left in the year, between now and the end of the year. So what we do have to cover, because the one document or the two documents that I know I need to cover this year with you, is the Organic Act and the treaty that was made between the United States and Britain in subjugating the United States in this treaty. And that treaty itself, it was unconstitutionally done. And the Organic Act was a violation of the Constitution as well. This was the beginning. This was the breach, the major breach in the Constitution. As we talked about it in this past week, the reason why this breach occurred, because it was the straw that broke Britain's back. Britain had spent so much money over almost a century of trying to destroy this republic, because they were buying and buying and undermining and spending all of this money to undermine us. And they were actually funding the Civil War for the Southern states to basically ensure that we became a shattered nation so that they could then pick us off. And so when that didn't happen and the 14th Amendment basically made it law that no foreign country would be able to receive money for its debt. So technically, when they signed the Organic Act in that treaty to funnel money to Britain, they did it in direct violation of the 14th Amendment. And so there's one of the reasons why the 14th Amendment, for the longest time, with this new class of people who came in, they didn't know how to get rid of it without repealing it. And so what they tried to do is they tried to create this uncertainty as to whether it was ratified or not. And interestingly enough, Wikipedia actually provides enough of the academic information as to how it was ratified. So as we finish going through the Organic Act and this treaty, we'll probably have a little bit more time to cover a few more things, because these are pretty meaty documents. Now, one of the things I will tell you is that, because I want to get this out, I'm working, because I haven't done it yet, but I'm working on a documents page. And on this documents page, it is going to be a treasure trove of actual source documents, as well as documents that I have imported into Word. So you're going to be able to download Word documents that I've kind of formatted. I don't edit them, other than the formatting, and they have highlights and those types of things, because I want these things to stand out. The reason I format them is, one, for the navigation pane. So if you're familiar with using Word, it just makes it a lot easier kind of to go through and go, in the Bible, they have these little indents that they cut into the page for the books. You go to this section, or you just put your thumb on that and you can open it up, and that'll take you straight to that chapter, or I should say that book, like the book of Mark. And so navigation panes kind of allows you to, one, dive into a document, and it allows you to sub-dive into parts of the document. And so you'll notice that we do that with the navigation pane as well as with the numbers. The numbers are a necessity for citations. I want people to start using citations in everything you do. When you actually cite something, you actually put that citation, a footnote into it, so that anybody can actually go read it for themselves, so that they know that this is the truth. Because when people see and read these things and they go, wow, that's exactly what they said, then there's no second guessing. Academic standards are critical, because when you actually provide the source information of what was understood, it is irrefutable. That's how it was defined. This is how they defined a natural born citizen. This is how they defined this ambiguous thing that we want to talk about, the militia or martial law. Understanding those definitions are critical, because if we don't understand those, because that's the foundation of our law. Remember, Thomas Jefferson talked about ignorance of the law is no excuse, because if you become ignorant of the law, then they can start pretending what the law is. And that's where we are today. And that's why, we've become ignorant on the scriptures, and we've become ignorant on the law of the land. The two are different. The scriptures is what basically guides you for your salvation. The law of the land is what guarantees you your liberties. They're different. And so, because I deal with people all the time, and I can't tell you how many times I keep on being pulled into these concepts that we got to have, we got to have a Christian nation. And I go, well, we can't do that. I mean, anybody that wants to push and go through that, because all you're going to do is you're going to basically break America. We have to actually get everybody to understand contracts, and everybody has to become a lover of the law and the contracts, because everybody wins when the law is being abided by. Why? Because they have the right to choose for themselves, just like you do. And when everybody sees that they're better off having the right to choose than allowing government to tell you what you can do and what you can't do, because government will kill you if we go down that path. And we're seeing this. So why would anybody want to actually go back? And it's not about being secular, godless, or, you know, Christian and, you know, worthy of, you know, salvation, those things. It's, they're two different things. I don't believe that America can be saved by the church itself. I do believe that God understood why we would actually deviate so far that we'd become a godless nation. And I believe that's why he gave us a constitution that would actually stand against the, I'll just say, the drifting and the evolution and the erosion of time. Because when it's in a contract, when it is established as the law, and people actually see the merit of these things that, you know, came from a righteous people, then I think it helps open their eyes so that they can be receptive to the righteous message again, because there's too many people that haven't. We can't save the church until we actually save the nation. It's you're going backwards if we try to save the church first. We got to get the church back. Is bottom line at this point in time, and even Trump tried to deal with this. And he didn't. He didn't. He did some nice things, but he didn't. The problem is that the government has its heel on the necks of the churches, because the churches have been unconstitutionally placed into 501c3s. Well, hold on here. You know, they're taxing entities. No, no, no. And they use the law, the 17th Amendment, or no, the 16th Amendment, of a direct tax moving into income and saying, if your church has got income, then you got to pay tax on that. No. As a matter of fact, they can make no law respecting religion and or the expression thereof. And just because you come along and they say, oh, well, there's income there, we're making a law to tax you on that. No. As a matter of fact, you can't have one law that violates another. In other words, for the longest time, churches had been exempt. They've never had to pay taxes. And the fact that we created this income tax became problematic, because that was one of the ways they were going to attack, and that's how they corralled the churches. That's got to go away. It's got to completely go away. We can actually get rid of the income tax if we restore the imposts. Because if we restore the imposts, then America's goods, buying American, would actually be cheaper instead of building up nations worldwide. But what that does is it basically dishevels these corporations, because America has been the shopping mall for the world. As we become the consumers, look how small we are, and look at how much money we consume, because we've become such a wealthy nation. And we've become such a wealthy nation because we had great policies. But over the years, these policies have actually created these holes in the dike, in the levee, that have allowed our nation to actually start bolstering up evil nations that were actually hostile to us. The fact that China has been able to benefit as a communist nation off of America is antithetical to the standards. We should never have done that. Never. Based on the framers' standards and based on the importance of guarding and maintaining our sovereignty, and ensuring that we're not bolstering nations that actually have a plan to destroy us. And that's exactly what these communist nations have. They have a plan to destroy us. It is just like Islam. They want to take over the whole world. If you don't believe this, there's a really good book on my constitutional articles page, and I think it's even on my podcast page. It's called The Conspiracies to Overthrow the Churches and the Nations of Europe, I think, something like that. It's by John Robinson, and it was written, I think, in 1796, after the French Revolution, but this is when they started seeing, and this evil plan was being exposed, of how they were planning on taking us to this godlessness, and how money was going to basically start ruling all of us. Now look at where we are. Everybody is serving mammon. And we're judged based on how much we have and what we have and so forth. So anyway, anywho, actually, I will, I've got a few minutes left, 3 minutes left. Going into today, this is the worst time of my of the year in my life, when we have, you know, certain times in an annual period, we go through these things of seasonal changes. And when you live in an area that has such harsh changes from one season to the next, well, the fall and the spring are with when the seasons change. And so I figured I'd just take a little time to tell you that today I literally had nothing planned. I was going to just talk about the election. I had a few things I looked at. And I know I wanted to just kind of close on this whole thing of making all elections local. If I didn't emphasize this, I'll do it now on making all elections local. When you realize how precious your representatives are in making sure that nobody is influencing them in getting elected, in other words, they don't have that corrupt money, nobody's buying them, you're electing good people because the election is about the quality of the person, their understanding of the law, and so forth, not how much money they have. By making all elections local, you actually take money out of the election. That means that anybody can become elected. And when you actually do that, then you need to make sure you guard those people you elect to ensure that people with money don't get into their offices. And we need to actually have them create a law that doesn't allow lobbyists or anybody to come in and approach them. They should be hands off. They're your representatives. Technically, your representatives represent the Constitution. They don't really represent you. They give you your suffrage. In other words, when they're in there and they're voting on issues that are within their realm, within the powers that they have, their vote should actually be representing you on that issue, because that is the representation, that's the suffrage. So there's suffrage in the House and there's suffrage in the Senate. They're not there to actually bring you money. They're not there to make your life better. They're there to actually make decisions that your government has to make, and to make sure that those are sound and in compliance. And if they are, then 9 times out of 10, it isn't going to hurt. The only thing that actually hurts is when we go to war. That's it. I can't think of anything else where, you know, we would actually be hurt as a nation or as a people, as a county or what have you, unless we're being attacked. And so when they have to declare war, when they have to actually call up the militia, when we have to execute the laws of the Union, then I believe we could say, you know, this is creating a hardship, but it's necessary for a free people to enjoy their liberties. We must actually sacrifice. We have a self-governing system. And if we don't start governing ourselves, the world will govern us for them. And as a matter of fact, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. And hopefully this will begin your involvement today. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process,
process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.